Hi there. Welcome to Sound Healing Radio. My name is David Gibson, and our guest today is Jonathan Quinton, all the way from New Zealand. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
Great, great. Welcome, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
What I like to do is for each show, I like to state an intention. You have any ideas as to what intention we might hold for the whole show? If not, I can come up with one.
Oh, well, my intention is universal order, is opening people to the concept and the understanding and the experience of universal order through
perfect.
Geometry.
Perfect, perfect. So we hold that intention the whole show. Okay, before we start, I want to tell people a few things about things that are happening at the school. We just started a new semester. We have the certificate and associate degree program in sound healing and audio recording. And you could still jump in if you're in the area. If not in the area, we also have the classes for both sound healing and audio recording online. And I think the next start time is just next week for the sound healing class where you could start. We start about every 2 weeks for that. For the audio recording, we'll be starting around the first week of October. And so if you're interested, you can contact us at 415-777-2486. Or you can email me at david@soundhealingcenter.com. Or you can check out all the information on at soundhealingcenter.com. Of course, we still do a wide range of treatments online and treatments here at the Institute, full range of sound healing treatments. And we also have the store here. It's called the soundoflove.com, soundoflove.com. And we've got all types of crystal bowls and just about every type of vibrational piece of equipment that will vibrate you into bliss. And so that's online. And here at the Institute, we have a ton of bowls as well. But the big thing, of course, you might know about is we have the big sound healing conference coming up September 26th to the 29th. It's actually in Oakland, just across the bridge here from San Francisco, and it's at the Kaiser Center Tower, which also has a 2,000-person private park that we get on Saturday and Sunday. So we're having both the indoor conference, which has two different breakout rooms and exhibitors, and six different rooms for actually eight total for sound healings that people get to sign up for. So you get a sound healing for free. You can either get on a sound chair or get a treatment from a person and, or both. And, if you sign up for the conference, but, and that starts at around $210 for the 3 day conference. We also have post conference workshops. We have concerts every night. But if that is too much, then we've got the outdoor festival only on Saturday and Sunday, which is just $25. You still get to see all the exhibits, and there's a stage out there where we've got a sound healing music going on the whole time, and two workshop areas outside as well, besides the two inside. So if you're inside, you get the two inside for the full conference and the three outside as well. But if you're just doing the Saturday and Sunday, then it would just be the three outside. So, and one of our main presenters is Jonathan Quinton here. Jonathan is not only doing a workshop at the conference, he's doing a post-conference workshop. And I have to tell you, I've been to a couple of workshops with Jonathan, and we also have, sacred geometry classes here at the Institute. But I have to tell you, I've enjoyed Jonathan's workshops. I've been to a lot of sacred geometry workshops, actually. I've enjoyed his workshop more than any workshop I've ever been to on sacred geometry. And it's not just because he's kind of fun, but because of the clarity. The clarity of his presentation is so easy to get and so profound as far as the inspiration, the ideas that he brings forth. I just love his workshop so much. And I'm so glad that he's coming over from New Zealand just to be here at the conference. So, that's a, bit of an introduction, but welcome, Jonathan.
Thank you, David. And it's very high praise indeed. I'm very flattered by that.
Cool. So tell us, briefly, because I don't want to spend much time on it, but tell us how you got into this and then tell us what you do.
Okay, well, how I got into it, actually, it got into me, just the beauty of nature. I just couldn't resist it. I just adore, how every natural form is both a masterpiece of engineering as well as a work of art, and how nature combines beauty with function. And the more I got into it, the more I got into the patterns, then I got into sacred geometry. And of course, looking back at that, at the advanced ancient civilizations who were very steeped in it and developed these amazing structures that the temples and the pyramids and the pagodas and the mosques and the cathedrals and all of these things that were masterful forms that actually, many of them were also very sophisticated astronomical observatories showing that, they had thousands of years ago, in some cases, a really deep understanding of the cosmos. And the thing that, attracted me the most was that virtually all of the advanced civilizations, they used sacred geometry in their architecture, in their art symbology, in their philosophy. Some of them included it in their laws. And these people, a lot of these civilizations didn't know of each other's existence. They existed, in some cases, thousands of years apart, thousands of miles apart, yet they all tuned into the same archetypes, the same geometries, the same ratios and proportions, the meridians, the vectors. It all played out the same because this was the order that they observed in nature. And that's how I got started. And I went traveling. I lived in different countries in the Middle East for 5 years and then through Asia and Europe and America and that, finding out as much as I could, and at the same time expressing it through art, because I'm an artist at heart, a cosmologist and an artist. I'm a cosmologist, meaning that I study universal order and I express it through sacred geometric art and many different modalities, most specifically these days in computer animation, but I also build 3D models and, use colored lights and black lights and strobe lights and all sorts of stuff to bring these patterns through to a way that can be comprehended by us.
You've also got it in 3D as well, which, your visuals are some of the most amazingly beautiful visuals, and not only and animated and moving, and they're so cool to watch. I just love them.
I had a huge cargo van with an extended back and a raised roof to cart all my models around at one time. And they're in storage in different places here, there and everywhere. Stored, between California and Australia. Canada.
It's cool because, when you start moving sacred geometry images, it's really a whole nother level that is really completely, like another dimension. And when you just look at them, they do specific things to you, but spinning them and moving them, it's really a whole nother world, huh?
Well, you mentioned something very significant, whole other dimension. And that's the beauty of geometry, is it's multiple dimensions. Going from, states of pre-existence, because what it all stems back to are mathematical principles. And these are these principles are just implicit, you know, in the tapestry of creation. They're just there, and they've always been there, these pre-existing mathematical principles. Always were, always will be, stand independent of chaos and space and time, and even, according to the ancient philosophers, these mathematical principles stand independent of creation itself. They don't even need creation to exist as these mathematical principles. And, you know, invisible, motionless in an ocean of change, but they can be known to through sacred geometry, because sacred geometry cloaks these principles with the shapes and patterns. And then, you know, when we use the interplay of light and shadow and color, then we can get a sense of these universal geometric principles, and that's what I do. I just, you know, use shape and color and form and motion and sound and different modalities in order to bring it into a state that we can experience on the conscious level. And back to the dimensions, sacred geometry is a bridge, it's an interface between the different dimensions, but most specifically, the finite and the infinite, and the physical and the non-physical, because it exists in both worlds. It exists as these invisible, eternal mathematical principles, but, you know, it comes through. It's just ubiquitous throughout nature, because the grand architect of the universe used geometry to frame and order out creation. Everything is geometric, including us. And when we connect with this geometry and the patterns that emerge from the uniform divisions of the circle and the sphere, I think of them as sort of like cosmic vitamins, because there's this like biogenesis or bioregenesis. It has a stimulating and revitalizing impact on you if, you know, that's, if you give it your attention and if you consciously and mentally engage with these geometric principles. The experience of them, the effects of them can be quite rejuvenating and stimulating on many levels, but particularly the mental levels. And, you know, it feels like the different neural pathways in the brain are being stimulated and connecting different parts of the brain. And on another level, that's exactly what it does. Geometry is the only field of mathematics that uses the left and right brain simultaneously. It needs the left brain for the logical, rational, you know,
understanding,
analyzing and comprehension of it. But then there's the beauty and the profound implications of it that the right brain is required to engage. And when both the brains are working in alignment, then there can be a synergy where we fuse, where the two brains fuse, not physically, but, you know, energetically, as our consciousness merges into whole brain consciousness, whole brain awareness, and we can experience an expanded state of consciousness. And we can also experience through geometry the interconnectivity of all things, because, you know, geometry unites contrasting and diverse elements and unites them into a harmonious whole.
It seems like that's I keep coming back to that as the ultimate goal as to where we're all headed, is back to seeing and becoming a part of this matrix. Just seeing the whole matrix that we're a part of. It's like the way of the shaman. And it's like this is a very important path to really entrain us back into the way things are and how we're a part of this whole thing. You know, I often think, you know, I know that the sacred geometry in nature, the way Richard Feather here puts it, is it's like the marching orders of nature. It's like the pattern that nature starts out with. But then chaos kicks in and makes every little blade of grass, every little tree, everything in nature a little bit different. And just recently, I was looking at a field that kind of looked a little chaotic. I mean, there's kind of, you know, trees over here and bushes over here and grass over there. So there's a little, there's order. And, I mean, and of course, I know the immense amount of order in every single thing in that field. I mean, unbelievable amount of order and geometry to, for every single thing, including the rocks underneath and the ground underneath it. And I started thinking, okay, what percentage, and I always ask people, because I still don't really thought, what percentage is geometry, perfect sacred geometry, and what percentage is chaos? This may not be.
Well, it's the interplay. I think, you know, creation is the interplay of the two. Geometry is the blueprint. Geometry is the organizing principle. But the math gives way to the intrinsic and extrinsic forces, you know, that are at play, like, you know, the genetic coding of the seeds and the moisture of the soil, the humidity, the sunshine, the rainfall, the wind, if there's drought, if there's flooding, all of these variables, you know, pestilence, they all go to individualize every single natural form. And, you know, you mentioned the marching orders, geometry is like the marching orders of nature. And I also think of it as geometry is the habits of nature. And we have these habits and these underlying, these currents, but, you know, it's all individualized by the circumstances of every situation and every environment is subjected to complete, continually changing environment, which affects things accordingly and individualizes it, so that there's no two natural forms the same, but alike. And that's an important, you know, distinction to make here between the two geometries that we're talking about. One geometry is the blueprint, the mathematical principles. And when it's projected out in nature, it loses its mathematical perfection, but we can still tell, you know, what is the organizing principle behind the natural form, if it's a five-petaled flower, a six-petaled flower, or, you know, a seashell or a daisy or a pine cone or so many other things, a spiral galaxy. You know, we can tell what template it's based upon, it's organized by.
It's interesting when I think of it, I mean, just while you're talking the whole time here, I keep thinking simply harmony and that feeling of harmony, of perfect, beautiful harmony in that blueprint behind everything. And I just, when I bring that into my body, it feels so unbelievably perfect. It feels so wonderful. I just thought I'd say that.
Well, you know, that brings us to the point of your conference, that you've invited me as a geometer to present at a sound healing conference. And in fact, there's many correlations between geometry and music, as Pythagoras pointed out. Well, he described it as visual harmony, the harmony of parts with each other and with the whole. And they're both based on the relationship of numbers in music. It's the relationship of numbers in the frequencies and the intervals. And geometry, it's the relationship of numbers in space. And it's the same ratios and proportions we find appearing over and over again through harmonic sounds as well as harmonic shapes and forms, ratios.
It's interesting, you know, I talk about a hierarchy of vibration around sound, but I find it's in other areas too. And that hierarchy is you have frequencies, and then a combination of frequencies make a timbre or a tone, which are the harmonics. A combination of tones make up musical intervals. And when you add time, you get rhythm and music. And then the highest level is energy. And that's about, you know, consciousness and intention, adding that to it. And so I started mapping that out to geometry. And I just want to see what you think, because I got an interesting question here around it. So I thought, okay, maybe we got a circle would be the frequency in geometry. And you add those together to create all the different structures, which are like tones or timbres. When you have multiple geometries, they are like the relationship between multiple geometries become musical intervals, or even the sides of a geometry can be musical intervals as well. And that's probably the most common. But then you start moving the geometries and you've got music, same as you add time and changing geometries or moving through space. And then you can add energy and imbue the geometry with a certain intention or a certain energy of consciousness as well. And so I always think of the ultimate is the flow, the quality of the flow in music. And that's in music and in the energy. And so, so I often think of, but I've never thought about how the quality of flow, which is generally a flow that matches the geometry found in nature, the flow you find in nature and spirit, which is the most common flow, smooth flow that's consistent is the Fibonacci. You know, so I think of that pattern, that unfolding as the ultimate continuous or constant flow, because it's, you know, whatever you have before added to the present gives you the next. I mean, how more continuous can you be? So I think there must be other flows in nature through geometry as well. And any thoughts on any of this? I know it's a lot.
A lot of stuff there that can't be, you know, answered in one or two sentences. But is ubiquitous throughout age and is an expression of the goal.
Mm-hmm. And Fibonacci, you know, the numbers, as you said, the numbers are based from, it's the way nature counts. It reaches into the past, adds to the present to make the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it goes, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, 34, 55, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in that sequence, you know, that's how it develops. But if you, instead of adding the past to the present to make the future, if you added the present by the past at a certain stage of the Fibonacci and what levels out is the golden ratio, like 89 divided by 55 equals 1.618.
Uh-huh.
And then the next number along, it's 1.617. The one along, it's 1.619. But it balances out eventually at 1.618. So whenever you see the Fibonacci numbers, you're seeing an expression of the golden ratio. And you asked about other patterns, because the Fibonacci, you know, it's ubiquitous in nature and in music. And there are, in fact, two other key patterns that are based on the root powers as well. The golden ratio is based on, or is associated, it's an equation that starts with the square root of 5. Mm-hmm. And then, plus 1 divided by 2, and that works out to be 1.618. But the other two equations are much simpler. The first one is the square root of 2. And that is 1.414, which means that if you multiply 1.414 by itself, it makes 2, or almost 2, 1.999. And the other pattern is the square root of 3, which is 1.732. Now, the thing about this, these numbers and these frequencies, these harmonics, these templates, is that the square, if you have a square and you give the edge of the square the value of one unit of measurement, then the diagonal between opposite points of the square inside the square, that line, if you measure the length of that line, it measures 1.414 times longer than the edge of the square. Likewise, with the triangle, if you have a triangle, an equilateral triangle, and you have a line that measures from the tip of the point of the apex down to the base opposite the apex, it splits it into two scalene triangles, and you measure an edge of the scalene triangle against that, that vertical line, that measures 1.732 times longer, which is root 3. And so these are the three principles. These are the three archetypes, root 2, root 3, and root 5 plus 1 divided by 2, which we refer to as 5, the golden ratio. So root 2, root 3, and the golden ratio are the guiding principles that bring everything into manifestation. There is the interplay is orchestrated, the interplay of the self-organizing forces between force and matter is you know, organized through these geometric principles. And just as root 2 is embedded in the square and root 3 is embedded in the triangle, the golden ratio is embedded in the pentagon. Because if you give an edge of a pentagon the value of one unit of measurement, then the line that joins two opposite points of the pentagon measures 1.618 times longer than that. So in effect, the primary shapes, the first three shapes to emerge from uniform divisions of the circle, the primary shapes are actually mathematical programs encoded with the laws of creation. It has all of the ratios and the proportions, the systems of contraction and expansion and meridians and lines of force and radials and root powers and ratios and proportions are all brimming, are just jam-packed into these three shapes, not other shapes. Except, you know, when you use these three shapes to make other shapes, in which case a triangle, you know, a double triangle makes a hexagon, and a double square makes an octagon, and a double pentagon makes a decagon, then it takes them to another octave, and they're actually harmonic modules or modulators, and they generate these progressions and these systems that we find as the organizing principles of nature. And so when we use these geometries, or this is what my art is based on, is taking these geometries, most especially the pentagon, and arranging them into these amazing formations of infinite potential. Like inside every pentagon, you can have an infinite number of stars and an infinite number of patterns of every star relating to every other star through the golden ratio and through different systems of circular formations and spirals. Every star is related to every other star in an infinite matrix of stars through these geometries. And it's the same with the triangle and the square, although they don't have as much diversity as the pentagon does. But this is the art that we've seen through the ages, the Islamic mosaics being up to this point the most exquisite expression of it, showing, you know, the expansiveness, the extensive infinite abilities and possibilities of using just a few fundamental shapes but arranging them in an infinite number of ways, which is what nature does. Nature uses a very basic inventory of elements and forces and mathematical principles that can make an infinite amount of manifestations from them, just depending, you know, how it's being applied.
Mm. So do you quite commonly just go into this altered state while you're working with geometries where it just, you see the whole matrix of everything?
Well, if we're going to be talking about altered states, there was a watershed experience I had a number of years ago. Now, I've been following this path for 30 years, research and development, and 28 years full time. And I've been, you know, it's my life path. But a few years ago, it was back in the early 90s, after I'd been involved in it for some time, I had this experience. I was in New Zealand at the time. It was when I was living in California, but I was back in New Zealand on a visit. And circumstance dictated that for the first time in 15 years, I get on a motorbike. I wanted to visit a friend out in the country, and the only mode of transportation available to me was my brother's motorbike. And this was after I'd sworn never to get on two wheels again, because 15 years prior to that, I'd had a serious accident where a truck had gone to a stop sign and smashed into me, and I said, no more motorbikes. Famous last words, here I am riding a motorbike again, very, very, very carefully, mindfully, and I had an open-faced helmet on, and I was traveling in a country road, an unsealed country road, when altered state, I felt, I just shifted into an altered state of consciousness where I saw things, where it seemed like my surroundings, like life, moved into slow motion. It was like in a movie where things go into slow motion. And it didn't. The world didn't slow down. I think my mind sped up, so I was able to take in more information in a shorter period of time. And I saw this scenario. I saw this rock sitting about 100 yards ahead on a curve. And I knew that that rock was going to strike me between the eyes. And I could see hell. A car was coming in the opposite direction, and I could tell how its rear wheel was going to clip the rock and catapult it. And I could tell from the trigonometry and the calculus how its trajectory was going to connect with that point between my two eyes, my brow. And I also, my mind was working really quickly. I also knew that there was choice here, because I had an image of lifting my arm to deflect it or also ducking to avoid it. And I had an image of the projectile just flying over my head. But at the same time, I also had this feeling at the back of my mind that it was meant to happen, but it was choice. And I had a whole microsecond to choose. I knew, regardless of what I knew, if it happened, I knew for sure it would hurt. And so I had to take that into account too, but I thought yes. In the next moment, I see a blur of this projectile come hurtling towards me, and I'm wearing this open-faced helmet, and I tilted it just a fraction so that the rock struck the rim of the helmet. That took the main impact, fortunately. Otherwise, you know, I would have just split my skull like a ripe melon. And the rock deflected off there and struck me between the eyes. And I was quite right. It did hurt. In fact, my immediate thought was that, wow, it's hard enough to kill someone. And my mind just exploded into this amorphous mass of light and the state of oneness.
Wow.
And timelessness. And geometry, all these geometries, thousands of geometries, and it seemed to go on for a long time, but in three-dimensional physical time was probably just a moment or two before I returned to normal consciousness. in time to bring the bike to a safe stop. And I stopped the bike and I had concussion. I had stars spinning around my head and Tweety birds tweeting and blood pouring down my face and into my eyes. And I was shaking like a leaf from head to foot and covered and cold sweat and don't need that again. And anyway, to cut a long story short, a few weeks later, I was back in my studio in California. I was meditating on the Decagon, the double pentagon, when it felt like the tumblers in my mind came into alignment and opened up to these geometries that I had experienced momentarily streaming through my consciousness. Only this time I could freeze frame, I could hold them in my consciousness and work out how to replicate them, how to draw them. But this was, before I started on computers, I did everything by hand. So I drew them all by hand and drew hundreds of different designs from that. And all of this is incorporated in the work I do now, except, I use animation and other things. And in my latest video that I've just finished in time, I pushed so that I'd have it ready for the conference. It's called Awaken to Cosmos Through Sacred Geometry. And it's using these geometries to open up our conscious mind to the cosmos, to unified field and to the interconnectivity and the interrelativity of everything here. And, sorry, I got a bit sidetracked there, but, other dimensions and geometry in that. That was the most significant experience I've had of other dimensions.
Cool. So for just while we're thinking about it, is there a place where people can check out the video or get it from you if they don't make it to the conference?
Yeah, on my website, sacredgeometry.com.au.
Oh, cool. So, I know from last time you were here a couple of years ago when you were over at my place, I was under the understanding that you're not only just doing and playing with sacred geometry and doing cool visuals but you're also kind of opening and really helping to understand new aspects of it. And there's some new discoveries that you had come across, and I haven't talked to you in a couple of years. I mean, no telling what's happened since then. Is there anything new about the structure of the universe that you'd like to share with us in five minutes or less?
There's other people who are qualified to do that, but what I've done is I have revealed geometries, expansive geometries that are a tangible means of experiencing this really profound order. These geometries do not happen through randomization, through chaos. These are very purposefully and very intelligently ordered. And where do they come from? It's a trick question. They don't come from anywhere. They've always been there. It just takes a mathematician or an artist or cosmologist or someone to bring them forth, to cloak them, with color and light and shadow and work out, some way to share them out to the world. And that's what my focus has been.
Cool. We're just about to get funded to be able to do the virtual reality system. So we can actually put on the 3D glasses and see an image of any part of the body when you look down, and then be able to put geometries in any part of the body or put them around the whole body. I really look forward to connecting with you and once we get that underway. So tell us what people can expect from your workshops at the conference.
Well, it'll be like getting a download. I'll be downloading the templates into them to register them into their consciousness And it will provide them with tools, because through, you know, when you look at something, at anything, but specifically in this case, geometries, or anything for that matter, you don't actually see what the object that you're looking at. It's an interplay. You know, light is reflecting off it, and the reflected light is passing through your pupil and the lens, projecting it across to the retina, where the light sensitive fibers, the rods and cones, are pulsating in response to the light projected upon them and generating these neuroelectrical charges that pass along the optical nerve through the geniculate nucleus, which directs it to the occipital lobe, which then reformats the original image. It's like your television set. You're not seeing, you don't see the actual announcer in your set. You know, you're seeing a projected image of the announcer. And so when you look at these geometries, and I know that sounds a bit weird, you know, that, you don't see with your eyes. You look with your eyes. Your eyes are for a mechanism for looking at, for, accumulating information, but you see in your mind's eye, and think about dreaming. The images are virtually the same in your dream state, but your eyes are closed. And so, you know, it's not your eyes. It's your occipital lobe, and it's your mind's eye, as we refer to it. So as you look at these harmonic geometric templates, you are recreating them in your consciousness, in your mind's eye, and through the process of sympathetic resonance is helping to align your human instrument to the harmony of universal order. And that's what it is in a nutshell. If I had to encapsulate it, that's what it is. It's to aligning to the harmony of universal order.
It's just you're like a drug dealer of harmony.
Getting high.
I love it. So, you know, it's interesting. We've got a little more time. I've heard some people say the structure of the universe is the dodecahedron. And now Nassim, of course, is saying the structure of the universe is the torus. Any thoughts on this?
And you know, the Hindus, the ancient Hindus and the ancient Egyptians, it was, you know, the icosahedron.
Uh-huh.
And the icosadodecahedron.
And then there's the flower of life.
The flower of life and Metatron's cube. And, you know, I see these as organizing principles. And it depends, you know, where you place your focus.
Uh-huh.
What you're going to see. And so I'm actually, talking about Nassim. I'm going to stop with him, visit him for a week on my way over to catch up, you know, with his, research and see where he's at with that. And we often co-present together and, on the unified field. He does it from the physics perspective, and I do it more from the metaphysics perspective. And it's a beautiful complementation. And often, you know, I'm told by people from the audience who've been following Nassim's work for years and years that I've filled in pieces, you know, missing pieces that they couldn't quite get from the way he presented it, but from the perspective that I have offered, it gives them a more complete, more holistic picture of the bigger picture itself.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So it's interesting. It's really the ultimate goal is to bring this universe. It's our intention from the beginning, and that is to bring this universe. It's almost like just getting us back to being a part of this universal harmony that we are,
because The ancients had an expression, had a term, the journey home, sacred geometry, the schools of initiation, the ancient mystery schools. It was a journey home, which was referring to the human experience, the sense of separation when we move from the ethereal plane into the physical plane, and this yearning to return. But the density of our physical matter prevents this from happening. But sacred geometry offers another path. Sacred geometry is a bridge. Sacred geometry, you know, bridges both worlds. And so we get a sense of both through that.
It's interesting because it's exactly the same with the way I think of sound is not to get to the perfect sound, which I think of home as is in one respect, it's all sounds in the universe and the relationship of all of them. And same with sacred geometry. We're not trying to get to the ideal geometry. We're trying to get to the whole of it all so we can see how it's all interrelated. And that's where home is.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good to me.
Cool. Well, this is really great. Oh, let's see, I think I had one more question. I don't know if I'll remember it now. I'll remember it probably after we're done now. Well, I thank you so much for joining us. And again, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, what's your contact info?
Yes, it's my website is www.sacredgeometry.com.au, and my email address is Jonathan Quinton, spelled Jonathan Quinton, Quinton, @gmail.com.
Cool. Right. Well, thank you so much for joining us and sharing. And I look forward to your workshop myself.
Yes, good. I look forward to seeing you all there in just a couple of weeks. Less cool. than that.
Right. So okay. once again, what I like to do is end with our intention, and that is reconnecting or bringing in this universal harmony that we are. So if everybody would like to hold that energy, hold that in your body, hold that in your consciousness, hold that through all aspects of your being. Hold it, this universal harmony that we are, for the rest of the weekend, for the week ahead, weeks ahead. Imagine being connected to universal harmony for years ahead and even lifetimes. Thanks so much, Jonathan. Take care.
See you, David. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.